Bob McKenzie, our TSN Hockey Insider. How you doing, Bob?
Where do we sign up for the buyouts?
Outstanding.
Bobby, if TSN offered you $5 million next year to not come here, would you do it?
Oh, I don't know if I could take that pay cut.
Well,
kidding.
Yeah, of course. We remember that being in New York for the Vinny LeCavalier sweepstakes after he had been bought up by Tampa. And remember that, Bob? He was like,
wasn't it Philly?
Philly ended up giving him 5 years, $20 million or something like that.
24, it was something ridiculous.
It was crazy. And there were teams lining up to meet with Vinny after Tampa was buying him out for a ton of money.
We were around the corner from it. We were in New York for the draft.
Yeah.
And we said to each other, walking around the streets, we were like, just think, Vinny LeCavalier is just bunkered down in a hotel room right now with teams lining up to sign him. Where if you talk to anyone from Tampa, they're like, this guy can't play anymore.
Yeah. He was just covered in dollar bills. He was just laying there in a pile of money.
It's a good setup.
Exactly that.
Yeah.
Exactly that.
It was a very good setup. What's going on here in Columbus? We talked yesterday a lot about the Bobrovsky stuff. And to Tortorella's credit, he didn't give us anything. He said, listen, go read the press release and that's it. And now they've come out today and said, we're all good. We're moving on. But is that true or what's up?
Yeah, they're moving on. In the context of all along, there were two things happening here. One is the micro, one's the macro. The micro was he got pulled from a game and he did something, said something, did something that he shouldn't have done that ticked off management, coaching staff, and maybe even some teammates. And so that is a separate entity from the fact that he's got a strained relationship with Tortorella because they haven't had success in the playoffs, and a lot of that kind of blew back on Bobrovsky, and Tortorella was somewhat critical of him in that. So the relationship there has been a little wonky, and it happens at a time when he's in the final year of his contract. He's going to be an unrestricted free agent. He's got a full no move and a full no trade. So even if the Blue Jackets got ticked off with him and said, we've had enough of you, we're going to get rid of you, you can't. So he's in the driver's seat on that front in the macro picture. And technically, he was the one, I wouldn't say in the driver's seat, but he was the guy who this morning dictated how this micro issue was going to go. Either he was going to be contrite, and I presume that he was, and that allowed everybody just to say, okay, well, we're moving on. But you still have to deal with the other situation, but the manner in which Columbus will deal with that is likely just to let him play out the string and hope that he plays at a Vezina caliber level and that they upset a team or two along the way and they get themselves a deep run into the playoffs.
Sticking with the Columbus theme, Rick Nash officially retiring today, and the timing, I guess, is somewhat surprising. I mean, he had never indicated that he was officially going to walk away from the game. He was taking this half season off anyway. And I guess Dregs was reporting there were a bunch of teams that were calling his agent and wondering if he was going to get back into it. And he just said it's not going to make sense because of his concussions and because of his family and where he's at in his life. But that seemed like a pretty decent plan plan B for a lot of teams if they swung and missed on other guys, the idea of Rick Nash potentially being available.
Just not healthy. Can't do it, you know. And it's really sad because, I mean, you know, you play that long in the National Hockey League, you'd like to think that when you do retire, it's because you no longer want to play the game, not because you've got a brain injury that says, you know, if you don't feel good, just everyday life. And apparently that's kind of where Nash is at. So that's really sad and unfortunate on that level. In terms of the actual timing, I think he's probably known for a while that this wasn't getting any better and that at least not sufficiently to the point where he'd be able to play. And as is the case with a lot of these things, I'm going to assume that there's all sorts of insurance issues and whatever else, and that contributed to the timing as well. But I suspect that he's known for a while that this was not going to be in the cards for him, even though there was plenty of interest in him. I mean, he could have signed with the team last July and hoped that he felt better by the time training camp started, but he knew that wasn't the right thing to do. And if he had, he would have signed in Columbus, more than likely. That's
really
his home now. And he had a real good meeting with John Davidson and Jarmo Kekalainen in the off season, and that was really kind of the plan, I think, was to sign back in Columbus and finish his career there. But his health just won't permit it, so here we are.
Well, you look at health, and then Also, him being his age, the speed of the game, taking a look at even a guy like William Nylander trying to jump on a really fast-moving train. It's taken Willie Nylander a long time even to just look like he's comfortable out there. I can't imagine a guy like Rick Nash, he's sitting at home, he's not feeling 100%, and then you've got to get up to speed or try to get up to speed. Like the game is, in being in the front lines, the game is at an all-time high as far as speed right now. I couldn't imagine a guy missing a half a season and then trying to jump on and catch up and feel comfortable. It would take him right to the playoffs until he felt decent.
Yeah, I think the presumption all along was that he wasn't going to play this year anyways, more or less. You know, obviously if he started to feel really good, he could entertain that notion, but I don't think he was making the progress on the feeling better front that he ever seriously considered that he was going to be back this season. I think there was maybe part of him that thought, hey, you know what, if I take a year off, maybe it'll be better. But I think he's just got to the point with his family and the fact that it's been this long. I mean, you know, at some point and I'm sure he's well past that point now, you just worry about your future life, never mind hockey. It's got to be hard to leave the game behind, but it's harder to leave the game behind knowing that what awaits you maybe isn't very good. And just everyday life, you know, he's not healthy and he doesn't feel as well as he could feel. And how long that's going to last, he has no idea. So it's just time, obviously.
With Bob McKenzie, our hockey insider. Yeah. Tomorrow night, Leafs Bruins. You know what this game means for the Leaf fans because of the recent history between these two teams.
Everything.
Yeah, everything. This is it. Exactly.
This is
you got to treat it like a game seven tomorrow night. Where do you stand on all this from an objective viewpoint, the importance of this game?
Well, it's just one game in 82, but it's not, because you know you want to try to send a message if you're the Leafs that Boston's not your bugaboo, that you know that this is that you're not jinxed against them, that you can beat them, and that they're not in your head. And what have you. So it's an opportunity to do that. I mean, even if they were to do that, it would give us all something to talk about for the rest of the weekend and on Monday. But beyond that, I don't think it's got any lasting impression, not on the Bruins or, for that matter, the Leafs. And you got to kind of start all over again if you meet in the playoffs and fresh, clean slate. So, but it's fun. I mean, there's certain games in every team's season that mean a little more, and for Toronto right now, given the way the division's structured and the way the teams are playing, games against Boston and Tampa Bay are more meaningful than just about anybody else.
Yeah, absolutely. Those are the two teams you're focused on right now.
Right.
You know, Montreal and Buffalo, they're in the shuffle. It's not like the Habs and the Sabres are out of the race.
They're almost in that just layer below.
Yeah.
It's just, and they're going to battle for that wild card.
And you got to, the reality is right now, you know, if Tampa's kind of running away with the division, and so if you're the Leafs, you're thinking, okay, if we finish in second or third place, we're going through Boston and then we're going through Tampa, unless there's upset. But you know, those are the two teams you kind of have to beat to get to the conference, just to get to the conference final, not the Stanley Cup. You know,
yeah, no kidding.
That could be Washington or Pittsburgh or Columbus or the Islanders, or who knows.
Bobby, there's been a lot of talk about, you know, whether you think the Leafs have enough sandpaper. Do you think they actually try to address it? And we've been talking on this show. I tried to explain it, my father's description of it, which is no league in pro sports flips a switch come playoff time as far as the physicality like the NHL. So you can believe in puck possession, in exits, in entries, but the one league that it's a totally different ball game in the playoffs is the NHL. It turns into a war zone. Do you think they address that at all? And I'm not talking about going out there and getting Fraser McLaren and Colton Orr.
Yeah, but no, I understand. We're past that point.
Is it like any kind of addition like that, like a different kind of Zach Hyman or something to help out, or even on the back end?
You know, it's a good question. I think the priority obviously would be to get a defenseman, and preferably a right shot guy, somebody that could replace Hainsey on the top pair, so you could play Hainsey more as a third pair guy and continue to be a big time penalty killer for Mike Babcock. But you'd like to get a first pair guy or a top four guy that could play the right side with Riley, and I don't know. Is it a puck mover? Is it a stay-at-home guy? Is it a combination thereof? Probably a combination thereof. Could you add a depth guy that is more of a banger? And but, you know, I mean, you got to be careful you don't get into the too one-dimensional stage where, you know, Mike Babcock loved Roman Polak, but most other people didn't. And Roman brought a unique skill to the game, but it wasn't always as productive or as, you know, work out as well as you would like it to, at the expense of maybe some other guys. So, you know, it's really a case of you got to take it player by player and who is the guy, you know. So I don't know. There'd be lots of people, you know, suggesting Radko Gudas is available and he's playing top 4 minutes in Philly and he's been very physical and he's having a good year. Does that make an appreciable difference if, you know, is that the type of player? And I thought the Leafs would probably want somebody with more dimension than that. But, I mean, maybe you can get, you know, both types of players. And I'm not saying Leafs are going out getting Gudas. I'm just saying getting somebody who can be play high in your lineup, i.e. replacing Hainsey on the top pair. And that comes at enormous cost. It comes at the cost of a Kapanen or a Johnsson or somebody like that. And if that happens, now you've created a hole up front. So how do you replace that player? And, you know, is that where you go out and try to get a Michael Ferland as a rental or Wayne Simmonds as a rental? And I don't think the Leafs are too hot to trot on the whole rental thing. I talked a little bit about this, on Leafs Lunch, where if you're going to give up significant draft picks and or any young prospects or whatever, I think you want to do it for somebody who's going to be around longer than this year. The Leafs window is open, and some people think it's open wider now than ever because of the financial pressures that will be brought to bear next year and the year after and each successive year. And that may be true, but I still don't think the Toronto Maple Leafs look at their team as a fully finished product that's at its zenith or its apex right now. And if they don't go out and grab a couple of really good rentals to push them over the top, then the window's going to close. I would say quite the opposite, that they still think their best chance to win a cup is in the next 2, 3, 4 years as opposed to just this year. So there's a lot of things to weigh in terms of acquisition costs and what you're getting out of it. I think the preference, whether it's up front or on the blue line, is to try and find somebody who's got term left and you know exactly what the dollars are so you can figure out how to put the jigsaw puzzle together with Marner, Matthews, and whichever one of the RFAs amongst Johnsson and Kapanen, amongst others, are still around.
Good stuff, Bob. Enjoy the weekend, buddy. We'll do it again early next week.
Awesome. Thanks, guys.
It's Bob McKenzie, your Hockey Insider.